This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Love at first puff. That's how one teenager described his addiction to e-cigarettes. E-cigarette use has nearly doubled among U.S. high school students in 2018 and went up by about 50% among middle school kids. An advisory issued in December by the Surgeon General declared vaping an epidemic in the United States. Earlier last year, an FDA report described accused e-cigarette companies of failing to consider the public health impact of their products. Why has vaping become so popular with young people in America? What's being done to address this growing health issue? What are the dangers of e-cigarette use? And what are some common misconceptions? And how hard of a habit is this to break? And what effect does San Antonio's Tobacco 21 ordinance have on teen e-cigarette use locally? You can call in with your questions and comments, 210-614-8980. If you've got a take on e-cigarettes, some people think that there's a benefit to them. Well, we want to hear from you. We want to hear from all sides on this. But we've got the experts, and they're going to tell you what the health impact of these things are. The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined today with Dr. Ernest Hawk. He's a division head and vice president of cancer prevention and population sciences at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. Jennifer Harriet is the assistant director overseeing the community health division of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, and Jan Hoffman, health behaviors reporter at the New York Times. Thanks all of y'all for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Ernest Hawk, how big of a deal are we looking at with vaping?
Vaping's a major concern. Just as you reported some of the statistics, it's particularly concerning because it's rapid increase among our youth. So it's a very popular product, and gains have been very dramatic over the last decade that they've been on the market.
So you reported at the New York Times that this is really popular with kids, that they call it juuling, and that they're finding themselves addicted, heavily addicted. Talk about some of what you've seen.
Let me unpack this. One generic term is vaping. When kids are juuling, they're referring to probably the most popular product known as the Juul. Kids love this. Juul happens to rhyme with cool. The Juul itself, although there are many imitators, looks like a USB drive so that kids can hide it. It looks very discreet. It's very techno-oriented. And it is ostensibly, although we can talk about age restrictions, not illegal yet. It gives them the allure and attraction of not smoking cigarettes, which I think in this generation of teenagers is well known that that's a forbidden. In fact, one positive we can put against the soaring statistics for vaping is that historic lows have been found for rates of smoking among teenagers. So vaping gives them an out, it makes them cool, and it makes them look something like they're doing something slightly forbidden and dangerous.
Now, Juul is a particular product. It's a brand name. And
right.
This is something you may find in the aisle at stores or behind the counter at convenience stores. But it is particularly refined in a super delivery system for nicotine. The Dr. Ernest Hawk, can you talk about that?
E-cigarette, Juul, as you said, Juul is one particular brand. It's the most popular brand of a larger product class called e-cigarettes or ENDS devices. You hear them called many different things. The idea behind them is essentially to deliver nicotine. So most all of them contain a hydrating vehicle. Propylene glycol is very common, but there are a variety of different possibilities there. Second, nicotine. And finally, most of them contain flavorings as well. So usually three major classes of constituents in almost any vaping device.
And I understand that a Juul device is refined, and it delivers an even finer mist into the lungs with the nicotine than conventional smoking or some other vaping technology will, so that this is a you really feel the punch from the nicotine almost immediately, and that this is one of the reasons why people love it so much. I mean, is that what you have found in your reporting, Jan Hoffman?
Well, absolutely. Juul is front-loaded with probably a higher concentration of nicotine than many other similar products. And certainly, as Dr. Hawk well knows, nicotine is extraordinarily addictive. So it is the addictive property in tobacco cigarettes as well. Kids are further induced to keep trying these various products because of the delicious flavorings and the names of the flavorings. You know, Juul itself, you know, has mint and creme and cucumber, but many other products have names like unicorn milk and chicken and waffles and strawberries and cream. I mean, how can kids resist? That plus the nicotine hit, which really affects various, you know, the prefrontal cortex, basically the developing part of their brain, makes them very readily susceptible to addiction. And because their brain is developing, they are, the statistics, which Dr. Hawk knows far better than I, show that teenagers into young adulthood are much more likely to become addicted to tobacco products or nicotine-laced products than even older adults. That's one of the reasons why these are so pernicious.
What are we looking at, Dr. Hawk? Are we looking at a generation that is growing up are primed to be a lifelong addicted to nicotine?
Yeah, well, that's our major concern, of course. Over the last 50, 60 years, since the first Surgeon General's report on tobacco and cancer, at least, or tobacco and health effects, we've had great success at a public health level through both individual action delivered through physicians' warnings and physician actions, the health community at large, as well as at a population level through public health messaging, taxation, a variety of different measures have come together to drive down use of traditional tobacco very substantively. And with that, we've seen cancer rates fall, heart attacks, stroke rates fall to record lows in our population. So that's a great thing. The biggest challenge that we see on the horizon with the uptake of these devices is that we'll reverse those very positive trends, create an entirely new generation that are addicted to nicotine, which is one of the most powerful addictive substances. Many people would put it kind of on the same level as cocaine or in some cases perhaps even other opioids. It's a very powerful addiction, and that's why we feel this is such a major concern for youth.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we're trying to get to see what our callers think about this. Have you ever tried e-cigarettes? What's the appeal? Do you think it's healthier than traditional smoking a cigarette? Do you have any teenagers who vape or friends who do? Are you worried about it? Do you vape, and do you think that, are you considering trying to quit? Have you tried to quit? What was that like? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. When we come back, we're going to talk about San Antonio's Tobacco 21 ordinance. How is that working? How could that become a tool in trying to help teens deal with vaping here locally? How to help them realizes the consequences of what they're doing. 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about teen vaping, a real concern about a generation. These are not people who were smokers and then they became vapers. These are people that grew up introduced to vaping by friends at school, and they became addicted to it, not really realizing what is happening to their brain, physiology, and how this could be an addiction that could be with them for the rest of their lives. Is this is a public health concern? How should we deal with it? Is better messaging, better education? And we do have here in San Antonio a Tobacco 21 ordinance, which means that you have to be at least 21 years old to buy cigarettes and snuff and dip and also e-cigarette products. So let me go to Jennifer Harriet. She's with the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District to tell us more about that. So how is it that Tobacco 21 also applies to e-cigarettes.
Basically, Tobacco 21 applies to all tobacco products, and so we were able to include e-cigarettes because we recognized that among youth it was really skyrocketing.
But because it's the nicotine?
Nicotine comes from tobacco, and so that is how it is connected to a tobacco product.
Okay, so that means you have to be 21 in San Antonio to go to the store and buy one of these things.
That's correct. You cannot sell tobacco products to anyone under the age of 21 in San Antonio.
But we knew, though, that even before this Tobacco 21 passed, it was 18, mm-hmm. and still high schoolers and middle schoolers were able to get their mitts on these products.
Yeah, like with any products that aren't available to youth, they find a way to get their hands on it. But the further the distance you put between someone who can legally purchase a product like tobacco products and e-cigarettes and that social group. So now someone who typically was 18 and still in high school could purchase e-cigarettes legally. Now they aren't able to do that. And so that social group between the 18 and maybe a 19, 20 or 21 year old who's, you know, off in college or graduated from high school puts a little bit of distance, and it makes it a little bit harder for young people to access.
So we're still transitioning to full enforcement on Tobacco 21?
The ordinance went into place on October 1st, 2018. So it's fully enforced, and we have people within the health department who are going out and checking to make sure that the signage is up, that the retailers understand what the rules are, and we'll start enforcing in full sometime this spring in terms of actually having decoys going out to check to see if the retailers are implementing the ordinance.
So, and what would be the penalties?
I believe it's a warning initially, and then it's a ticket, and I don't recall, I'm not sure exactly if it's about a $500 ticket, depending on what the infraction is.
And San Antonio is the first city in Texas to adopt a Tobacco 21, and is there... pushback's coming already. We've got a lawsuit from some of the retailers.
We do have a lawsuit, and our city attorneys are looking into it, and we'll be addressing that down the road. But, you know, this is kind of the direction that other communities and other states are going. So there's about 7 states that have already become Tobacco 21. Texas, there are 2 legislative bills that have been filed already this session to increase tobacco consumption tobacco sale to 21. So we're hopeful that it will become a statewide initiative or a bill ordinance, but it's hard to know. So we were really proud to at least have made the change here in San Antonio.
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. We want to hear what you have to say about vaping and Tobacco 21 and the concerns. Let's go to Jesse. Hi, Jesse. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
No, I just wanted to call in and touch base. I was listening to you guys for a little while right now. I want to say, first off, I'm only speaking from personal use. Second off, I don't, you know, condone any kind of tobacco or nicotine use. But, I mean, I was a smoker since probably my late teens. And, you know, I smoked. I'm in my mid-30s now. I've been smoking for years and years. Within the last year, I picked up Juul because I'd actually read up on it and how it delivers nicotine and why it's, you know, so addictive. I thought, well, maybe that'll help. Since I've started using the Juul product, I've actually cut back significantly. I use maybe 1 to 2 Juul pods a week now, whereas before it was probably maybe about 1 a day. I can't pick up a cigarette. The smell nauseates me, and it's completely deterred me from the actual smoking of tobacco. Like I said, I'm just speaking from personal use. And again, you know, really just trying to push that, you know, I'm not condoning any kind of tobacco or nicotine use.
Jesse, thank you so much for calling in. We'd like to get the reality check from people who are out there and who are using these products. But let me go to Dr. Ernest Hawk to talk about, you know, Jesse's use. And he switched from traditional cigarettes, you know, lighting up a cigarette, and now moving towards e-cigarettes. Is that, what do we know about the health impact of that?
Yeah, well, a number of points to be discussed about that. First of all, it's great to anything that's possible to reduce your consumption of traditional tobacco is great. We know that to be exceptionally harmful, proven over decades of time. So that's a great thing, to cut back on traditional tobacco. Is this the best way to achieve that is the next question. We have now 7 or 8 FDA-approved products that can help smokers quit. And the most effective, evidence-based, proven way to try to help smokers quit is by the use of those products in conjunction with behavioral therapies or counseling. Those are very effective strategies. We have a number of those sorts of programs that are available, and typically with success rates of on the order of 35 to 45% success in terms of quitting the use of traditional tobacco. It may be that Juul or e-cigarettes or other similar products will be useful in helping smokers quit. But the studies really aren't, haven't been done yet at this point, and for a whole number of reasons that, again, we could talk about for quite a while. So it's great that he switched from traditional tobacco to an e-cigarette. We believe them to be less harmful. We think that that's a step in the right direction. But actually, there are alternatives to get him completely off of being addicted to nicotine, which are proven to be more effective. And so that's what we would recommend.
But people don't really, there's still a lot of education that needs to be done about the difference between vaping and smoking. And the vaping cloud, as I understand it, and doctor, please tell me if I'm wrong here, contains a high dose of the nicotine and other products. We don't know what's actually in that cloud, what happens to them when they're heated up, and getting them on your skin can actually deliver the nicotine and other products to you that could, you know, impact you.
Yes. Again, we don't know that these are going to be safer products. We suspect they are. They seem to have fewer carcinogens or cancer-causing chemicals in them. However, the long-term effects of the use of these simply we have no data on because they've only been around for a decade in time. Additionally, there's no product standardization. So we can talk about this product versus that versus those vapes, and they're all different. There's no regulation around their context, their production standards. They don't have to be tested in any uniform way. There's no uniform reporting on what's in them. And as I said, the most concerning part is we don't know what the long-term health consequences will be. And so for all of those reasons, the better choice would be to speak with your physician, enter a nicotine addiction program so that we can use things that we know work and are safe and effective as opposed to vaping devices that are unproven.
I've got a clip here. This is from the CEO of Juul, Kevin Burns.
Our mission at Juul Labs is to improve the lives of the world's 1 billion smokers and eliminate cigarettes. While working towards our mission, an unintended serious problem has developed: underage usage of our product. Our intent was never to have youth use Juul, but they are. As the industry leader, we must lead the category in decreasing underage use. Today, we announced an action plan to do just that. For us to successfully fulfill our mission of helping adult smokers, we must be trusted, and we must earn that trust. That starts with action, not words. We thank Commissioner Gottlieb for his leadership in this area, and we look forward to working with the FDA to solve this issue on an industry-wide basis. Youth usage is a serious problem, and we are committed to solving it.
Jan Hoffman, health behaviors reporter for the New York Times. You've seen a lot of youth using these types of products, right? Does it seem to be that they're being targeted in the marketing?
I want to answer that question, and I also want to sort of close the loop on something your earlier caller said. Dr. Hawk is, as he knows, 1,006% right that there are other strategies to stop smoking. There is a theory known as harm reduction, meaning some people see e-cigarettes as less harmful than cigarettes, and so on a sliding scale, yes, they're not as harmful as. We are really talking about underage minors. We're not talking about, for the purposes of e-cigarettes in this conversation, people who are seeking to stop smoking. We're talking about entry-level tobacco-free kids, tobacco-naive kids, as sometimes they're called, who are being inducted into a world that they wouldn't normally otherwise have wafted towards, to forgive the pun. That's my concern. There is also no widespread education and health classes yet about the challenges of e-cigarettes. So finally, what I'm concerned about, you know, in terms of Juul's alleged, you know, sort of public benefit statements, is they were just 35% of the company was just bought by Altria, the big tobacco company. So if that is not a union made in profit heaven, I don't know what is. So I am particularly concerned that these products are very attractive to teenagers. They, you know, teenagers need to take risks. That's, they're sort of hardwired to do that. And in their minds, if you ask them, are e-cigarettes safer than cigarettes, they will say absolutely. And we have not educated them enough about the true harms of nicotine.
Do you think that Juul has targeted teens in their marketing?
It's not only Juul, but absolutely. I mean, you ask any kid, of course they're going to say that. That they have been targeted, but they, of course, they wouldn't use the word target. Juul had a very active social media presence. They were on YouTube. They were on Twitter, all sorts of things. They've said they're now shutting down their accounts. But, you know, the cat is out of the bag. There are also innumerable other forms of e-cigarettes out there. There are pens. There are little water tanks. There are hookahs. You name it. Juul is sort of the most popular and is the most front-loaded with nicotine, but it is only one of innumerable products that really do the same thing. One final thing. You made a comment about nicotine being absorbed by the skin. I don't want you to conflate the notion of a nicotine patch, which is put on the skin, as opposed to the e-cigarette, which has an aerosol, which is taken into the lungs. That's a very different absorption system. And the absorption system of nicotine through e-cigarettes is much more immediate, much more potent than a slow release of nicotine in the skin, which is one of the cessation products that the FDA has approved.
Right, but you can absorb it through the skin if you're standing next to someone who is vaping or a baby who is there being vaped around. They're going to get a contact high.
Dr. Hawk, you take that one.
Biologically, that makes sense as though that's possible, but I don't know that there's been studies documenting that, and so I would feel that's more a research question than something that's established fact.
Just shows you that there's so much we don't know, but we have to be cautious about until we can find out those answers. So not knowing that, but people should be aware of doing this around young babies. You know, I see people vaping, standing, you know, with children in their arms. The doctor?
Yeah, well, again, I wouldn't recommend it for either the parent or you know, the adult or the child. that's probably the most important single message.
One thing also I wanted to point out, you know, as Dr. Hawk noted, there are a number of protocols that the FDA has approved for smoking cessation, or essentially for breaking your nicotine addiction. None of these are officially approved for adolescents. They're only approved for adults. So there really is no official protocol to help kids get off of nicotine addiction.
All right, we're going to take a break.
That's exactly right. It remains a research question.
Got to take a break. We'll be right back. We got a caller. We're going to get you on the air in just a second. We'll be right back. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about teen vaping, why teen vaping is such a concern. They're young, they're vulnerable, their brains are still forming. And it turns out that it's available to them, even though we do have Tobacco 21 in San Antonio. Let's get some callers on the air, 210-614-8980. Let's go to Deanna. And Deanna, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I'm a 26-year-old living here in San Antonio, and I was definitely raised knowing the health concerns that tobacco and smoking would have on my health. And even though when I was in high school and vaping was really starting to pick up and become popular, I just never went towards it at all. But I have a little sister who just turned 20 recently, and she was in town for Christmas break from attending school in UNT. And I just wanted to say I'm so appreciative of Tobacco 21, because it doesn't matter how much I try to influence her in a healthier lifestyle, she legitimately told me that she's addicted, and while she was here on Christmas break, she couldn't go and refill her Juul. She couldn't go and get her juice. And so I'm just really appreciative that at least the restriction that we have here in San Antonio kept her away from using her tobacco products, even though the family kind of tries to help her not go towards it.
Well, Deanna, thank you so much for your call. I'm going to go to Matthew. Hi, Matthew. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, I was just calling because I work at a convenience store, and right now in San Antonio, 18-year-olds are allowed to have tobacco products. They're allowed to use tobacco products. Tobacco 21 just makes it illegal for someone like me to sell it to them. So we're in situations where 18-year-old customers can literally go across the street from my convenience store that's in the city limits to one that's not in the city limits and get their tobacco products. So I just think that the law isn't fair, that it only punishes sellers and it doesn't punish tobacco product users. And I think that it's really ineffective, and it just hurts San Antonio businesses.
All right. I appreciate your call, Matthew. Thank you so much. Jennifer Harriet is the assistant director overseeing the community health division of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. And she's at the point on running Tobacco 21 here in San Antonio. She's part of that. So we heard from two callers, different points of view.
Mm-hmm. It's great to hear that it's had a positive impact on some folks in this community. And the fact is that unless we pass Tobacco 21 throughout Texas, there will still be those areas in town that are not part of the city of San Antonio in which people can still go in and purchase tobacco if they're 18, 19, or 20. So in a perfect world, we'd have it covered through a state bill. But for now, it definitely makes it more difficult. And it's true that the onus is on the seller. They are not allowed to sell tobacco to anyone under the age of 21. And we have just, we very intentionally chose to not be punitive against the youth because, one, it's very difficult to police, and it also just putting them in situations where they're facing criminal charges for something like tobacco purchase felt like it wasn't the right direction to go. And we did follow what other states and other communities have done in that regard.
So do you have like Balcones Heights and Leon Valley and all these little yep. communities here in San Antonio who are under different municipalities? Is San Antonio Metro Health working with them to come along and form their own ordinances?
Yes. So we have worked with a few of them, any of them who are interested in it. And Leon Valley recently passed the ordinance to make it Tobacco 21, so you can't purchase tobacco in their community unless you're 21 years of age. And we have been working with some of the other municipalities to bring them along as well. In regards to Juul and Juuling, I mean, that is the term that's used in our community and shows you how prevalent it is. When I asked when I asked my 17-year-old this morning, so what do we call it when we talk about, you know, she said vaping, or actually it's just Juuling now. So that is definitely the choice here in San Antonio from what I understand.
And let me go to caller. This is Greg. The number is 210-614-8980. If you want to weigh in on teen vaping and your experience, and if you're a parent, you know, if you have questions about it, if you have a child who's vaping, let's go to Greg. Hi, Greg. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I hope in the future that you may revisit this subject and perhaps have a more balanced panel. There are public health experts out there that have fought smoking all their life that think that we're panicking a little too much about teen cigarette use. My question would be for the panelists that bemoaned the fact that some youth, if you ask them, is vaping safer than smoking, kind of bemoaned that. And my question would be, do you want to live in a country where youth are so misinformed that they would actually believe that using an e-cigarette could be just as hazardous as inhaling burning smoke into the lungs? And if
okay. All right. So let me go to Dr. Ernest Hawk. He's with MD Anderson Cancer Center. And can you respond to Greg's concerns?
Sure. I won't know. I don't think I'll be able to phrase it exactly as he did. But what I will say is that we have no idea what the long-term health effects of these products are. We know that some individuals develop lung disease from use of them in the relatively short time that they've been around. They've been on the market. They were developed back perhaps 30 years ago. They've really popularized in the last 10 years. Again, there's a whole variety of individual products when we use the term vape or e-cigarette. So there is no standards. So we use one term to describe many, many different products. We know that some of those, when exposed to things like diacetyl, can cause popcorn lung, a health concern in the lung where it changes the structure of the lung, makes them less efficient. And we just don't know what's going to happen 20, 30 years from now with the use of these products now. And so I continue to say that without solid evidence on the health impact of these products, it's not something that we should consider to be safe and harmless. Indeed, the use of nicotine in the developing brain has been shown to have detrimental effects on learning, memory, impulse control, and attention in the short term. So particularly use by youth, I think, is something we should feel very strongly about trying to guard against.
Greg said that there's he said panic. Is there panic about youth vaping, doctor?
Panic would imply that we're out of control, to my mind, and I don't think there is panic. There is severe warnings because of the concerns that many of folks in the health sphere, be they physicians, nurses, whomever, have about the health implications. We're used to trying to promote health and guard against things that might threaten health, and that's what this is really all about.
And, doctor, are there any benefits to vaping?
None to my knowledge, except perhaps in the case that we heard of the example of the individual earlier who used tobacco and found that vaping could be a bridge to quitting ultimately, or at least reducing their exposure to traditional tobacco products. In the UK, for example, that's a dominant public health strategy trying to get smokers to switch over to e-cigarette use. That's done so without clear evidence of that reduced harm, but with a suspicion that there's reduced harm. And for established smokers, I would say this is a step in the right direction. I would prefer that they go through one of the established, well-established treatment programs to actually break the addiction entirely. But it may be a step in the right direction for those who smoke already. For kids, I think there's nothing but downside.
And Jan Hoffman at the New York Times, you're seeing kids who are addicted to vaping and juuling and other products. When we say they're addicted, what does that look like?
I'm just going to narrate to you the experience of a high school social studies teacher in California who described it very vividly to me. He talks about kids abruptly leaving class to go to the bathroom to vape. He said, because they are not even able to go through an entire class without taking a hit. That's what it can look like. I think what's particularly difficult for parents and why kids like it so much is that it is very easy to hide vaping. Most parents don't know what the pods look like. They don't know what the vaping device looks like that their kid is using. The smell dissipates within seconds. So that you can walk into your teenager's room and have no idea that they had just vaped a few seconds ago. Addiction, I mean, that's a very loaded term. I find it's a sliding scale term. But for kids who are addicted to nicotine, they find that they have to use their vaping device. They can't go a day without it. They often can't go an hour without it. I have been around vapers who have exactly that kind of behavior. They really, as the kid I profiled said, he felt that it was his 11th finger. He said he was totally enslaved to this tiny little USB device. Kids have exhibited memory challenges, executive functioning challenges, They really get very irritable if they are without their nicotine, and it is, as Dr. Hawk said, an extraordinarily difficult habit to break. It's not like you can just put it down and walk away from it.
All right, we're going to talk about helping teens find a path to quitting, and as you have reported, Jan Hoffman, there is no clear path for quitting vaping. So what is available out there? What do pediatricians, what do they have? What are they seeing? And what can San Antonio do? What can we do about educating kids? Because probably the best way to quit is never start, because we're talking about a very powerful narcotic that's very addictive. The number to call in, if you've got questions or comments, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Teen vaping is our topic today. And right now we're going to switch towards trying to help kids who have found themselves addicted to these Juuls and e-cigarettes and other vaping technology. How hard is it to release the grip of the e-cigarette for these kids? What's out there, and how hard is it for these kids? Jan Hoffman with The New York Times, you've written about this. What do you see? Are you seeing kids able to break the addiction? And what do they have to go through to do that?
The first challenge is whether kids want to break the addiction. It takes a lot for a kid to acknowledge that he or she is addicted. And that really is an enormous hurdle. Because juuling has so much social cachet, a kid would really be hard-pressed to decide to stop. That's the first challenge. Another challenge is that schools don't have formal ways to help kids stop. They can suspend them and kick them out of school briefly for juuling in school, but they really, for the most part, writ large, have no protocols to actually help kids and understand that they have a problem. They know how to punish them, but that's about it. We also haven't educated pediatricians to know how to engage kids in conversation knowledgeably around this and have pediatricians intervene. So the kid I interviewed was an incredibly thoughtful kid who was in pain about the fact that for 2 years, as he put it, he was a slave to this little device. He struggled to try to quit. He tried cutting back on numerous occasions. And finally, after 2 years, he did go cold turkey, but he said that it sent him into a kind of a very terrible place for about 3 weeks as his body essentially went into withdrawal. Now, this kid is very disciplined. He was able to do it, but he's described as excruciating, and he said the biggest deterrent to starting again is the memory of what withdrawal was like. A lot of people could not do that and have that fortitude.
Right, and if you live in a high-stress environment and maybe you don't have a lot of support systems around you, if you live with a lot of chaos in your life, it's going to be really hard for you to put that thing down. So Dr. Ernest Hawk at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, if we don't get a handle on this, what are we looking at in 10, 20, 30 years?
Well, the fear, of course, is that we'll go back to the way things were 30 years, 40 years ago, with large portions of the population addicted to nicotine. I wouldn't think that addiction to anything is where we want the public to be. And so I think it's really important that we raise public awareness and we try to assist folks in not making that first choice to use these products. Addictions are a horrible thing to try to treat. Addiction to traditional tobacco, you can ask any smoker. If almost 70-80% of them want to quit, but they have very low success rate, less than 5% annually in being able to break that addiction. I don't see how this can be positive in any regard for anyone, and that's why we're speaking out about the harms and the threats that that juuling and the use of these similar products, e-cigarettes, has the potential impact that it has on the population level.
and Jennifer Harriet with the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. The reduction of smoking across the population we've seen that over the decades. It's been one of the great public health victories that we've had in America. Are we concerned that there's going to be some backsliding going on? These next generations will come up. They're not smoking cigarettes, but they're still being addicted to nicotine, and nicotine intake is something that could cause cancer.
Yeah, I think what we are seeing is that young people in particular who've started vaping have a 4 times more likely chance of actually then picking up use of tobacco products or tobacco combustible products. So there's definitely, this can be seen as sort of a gateway into using other drugs and having a higher susceptibility of using products that are addictive. So we do not, want to slide back into what it was. Already seeing about 20% of young people using e-cigarettes or vaping products is a huge concern for us.
How much are these things?
They're not cheap. So it costs about $50 for a starter kit for Juul, for example. And then once you need to refill your pods, that costs another $16 for 4 pods. So it's not cheap. It ultimately ends up over a year costing about the same as a pack-a-day smoker, so about $6,000 a year.
And Jan Hoffman at the New York Times, you've done a lot of reporting with young vapers. Is it like one person will bring a device to school and it gets passed around, or is that frowned on? How does that work?
Well, one of the impediments to quitting and breaking the addiction is that it has so much social cachet. So kids like to gather around someone who's vaping. It's seen as a good thing to share your device with other kids, to let other kids have hits on it. And then, in fact, the more addicted you become, the sort of more squirrely you become because you don't want to share because you do know how expensive it is. But the social cachet is part of what keeps driving kids to keep doing it. Also, nicotine has a certain soothing quality to it. It can focus you kind of briefly, almost like an attention drug, and it can calm you down. So kids who are anxious or depressed are even more vulnerable to becoming addicted to vaping via the nicotine hit that they get. One thing that we haven't mentioned that I think is significant in all this is that I think it's terrific that San Antonio has this new ordinance. I believe the entire state of California is like that now in terms of the 2021, but it's the internet.
Yep.
where kids can really get these products, and those controls are much less firm, and that's where kids are really getting a lot of the products.
So they can just buy them online.
Sure.
So a doctor,
or they get somebody older to get it for them, and then it gets distributed. Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Ernest Hawk, is there a statewide coordinated effort to try to make Texas Tobacco 21?
Yes, there have been bills introduced both in the last legislative session, as I understand, in the current legislative session, trying to make Texas, I think, the 6th or 7th, perhaps the 8th state in the nation to adopt Tobacco 21 legislation that, again, would restrict sales to individuals younger than 21. That's really important to keep traditional tobacco as well as these sorts of products out of the hands of high school in particular. About 80-90% of those who smoke say that they started while they were young, under the age of 20. And so these sorts of laws are intended specifically to keep them out of the hands of kids at a vulnerable time in their development.
What about educating the kids so that they don't take that first puff? Love at first puff. That's a line that you wrote, Jan Hoffman, quoting one of your sources there. So Jennifer Harriet, education, that's got to be part of this, right?
Yes, absolutely. And we do have some resources here in San Antonio through San Antonio Council on Drug and Alcohol. They provide education. They can come out to high schools and provide the information. I think what we've noted is that young people really didn't realize, since this was all flavored, maybe many of them thought it was just kind of a flavored water that they were using, and then realized it had some nicotine. And as we've moved from the traditional initial e-cigarettes that had maybe 1 or 2% of nicotine, the Juuls have 5% nicotine, which is much higher than the others.
So there's more nicotine in one juice pack for a Juul than in an entire pack of cigarettes.
It's about the same amount as a pack of 20 cigarettes in one Juul, but you can actually consume it maybe more quickly or have more readily have it more readily accessible.
And the delivery mechanism is more intense.
Yes, yes. So we do have resources in San Antonio, and I know the schools are struggling, because I know the school my daughter is in has reached out to us on multiple occasions. We do need to start educating young people about the impact of nicotine and the fact that it could become a lifelong addiction.
And Jen Hoffman, I keep hearing from people that there are kids in the classroom mm-hmm. being able to vape or Juul in the classroom and the teacher not even realizing it. Is that real?
Yes.
How do they do that?
I don't want to give a guidebook right now, but suffice to say that a teacher's back is turned, a teacher's at a blackboard, and something can happen very, very quickly, and then a kid can appear as if he or she is recharging their USB port on their laptop, period, end of sentence. The YouTube is full of videos of kids showing how to do different tricks with their various vaping devices. This is also part of the quote unquote fun of it. It really seeps throughout the culture. It's tricky. It's fun. It's got great alluring flavors to it. It's naughty, and it doesn't seem to be nearly as dangerous as tobacco cigarettes. So it seems tailor made for teenagers, unfortunately.
So Dr. Ernest Hawk. Are you scared?
Not scared, because I think education is the way to try to combat all of this. That plus motivation and there are a lot of activities through policy, through public education, and then trying to assist individuals. I did want to call attention to two resources, at least that I know of, that can serve as an educational foundation around teens and vaping. One is the Catch My Breath program. Both of them are readily accessible on the internet. That's a program that the Catch program has been in existence for about 25 years. Catch Global Foundation has put out specifically addressing this topic. It's been widely used, as well as another program called the Aspire program, ASPIRE, that was developed here at MD Anderson over the last decade or so.
All right.
That addresses.
We're out of time. Dr. Ernest Hawk, MD Anderson Cancer Center, Jan Hoffman, New York Times reporter, Jennifer Harriet, she's with San Antonio Metro Health. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.